Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamari, Managing Director of Elkett Global.
We are delighted to have with us today Mike Corbo, the Chief Supply Chain Officer of Colgate. Mike, a pleasure to have you. Welcome, and thanks for joining us all the way from the US this morning.
Thanks, Radu. It's a pleasure to be here.
So maybe just a way of quick introduction. So Mike has been with Colgate for a very, very long time. As many of you know, at Elkett Global, we have an executive search side of the business. So if Mike was our candidate, we would be out of business because he's been with Colgate for all his life. So he's had a myriad of roles. So he's been the Chief Supply Chain Officer since 2011. But before that, he was 2005, 2011 Vice President Global Oral Care. He also moved around. He was working in Philippines, in Asia. He was Director of Manufacturing Operations and many, many other roles. So Mike, a truly fascinating career. And maybe let's start there. I'm really curious. Tell us a little bit, how did you start? How did you stay so long at Colgate, and what keeps you going every day?
Well, it's a real interesting story, Radu. And I was in college and actually interviewed on campus by Colgate, got brought into one of their facilities, was in the Jersey City area of New Jersey, the oldest factory at the time. And I had completed my engineering degree, but I really didn't want to do engineering. I wanted to do more of operations management. And that was what they offered. And it was a terrific start, learned a lot. And that's one of the things along the way. I stayed here for my entire career. It's going on 40 years now. But it wasn't from a lack of looking or getting offers, or I was always learning something. I'm a big fan of doing things differently, trying to change to make things better. I'm not good with the status quo. I get bored. So it was never boring here. And if you look at the 40 years, I've had almost, I think it was 18 different jobs. So Colgate and myself and my personality were really a good match. And it's been a terrific time here.
And also, right, the company has fundamentally transformed a lot in these years. And I maybe just double clicking a little bit also, because I was reading you were like an engineering chemist
I had a degree in biology and chemical engineering. A funny story in 1980 in college, I told my advisor, who was a biology professor, that I was going to add engineering. And he said, there's no such thing as a bioengineer. So I guess he was wrong.
That's the best in life, proving our teachers wrong. Well, I was curious. Also, supply chain at that point probably didn't exist, right? I mean, also supply chain as a function has been defined over the last, 20, 30 years. I've not been around that long either. But how did you end up in supply chain specifically? And how did you, as a passion, going to all the way to Chief Supply Chain Officer, right? There's a story in there. Tell us a little bit about that as well.
You know, I started in manufacturing, and it was more operations type management. And one of the things that happened that got me more into different parts of supply chain is they announced that the facility I started in was being shut down. And during that time, and I've told this to many people, startups and shutdowns are the largest learning opportunities for people. So as people left, I had got to do everything. So from having a smaller role in operations, it became a much broader role of incoming raw materials, shipping out product, just from a necessity. And that really helped me learn quickly and able to apply that as I moved on into other roles.
Yeah. No, it's true. Well, there's opportunity in every crisis. Never let the crisis to waste. We are in the middle of one still. Yes. So kind of transitioning the conversation, right? And even, before we went live, we got a lot of questions from people that knew that you were joining. But we are in this middle of COVID-19 chaos in so many things, transport, global transport, there's issues everywhere, raw materials, So I guess my question to you in terms of Colgate supply chain, in terms of where you are today, and in terms of maybe the key focus areas for you in the next 12 to 24 months, what's some of the things that would come first top of mind?
This is something we obviously never would have projected, right, or had fully planned for. I think one of the things we've kind of made a decision is this is the new normal. What we're dealing with now, this uncertainty, this disruption after disruption, that's not going to go away. So instead of waiting for it to go away, how do we adjust to it on a daily basis? And I think we've done that pretty well. It's difficult. If you go back, when we started, we pulled out our contingency. We had some very good contingency planning, But no one would have had a plan for multiple shutdowns at the same time in multiple regions and disruptions on top of disruptions. And so we had to really show how flexible and agile we were as an organization. And I think we all take that as a strategy and something we strive for. Well, the pandemic pushed us into operation and showed us where we were very agile, where we did things very well, and where we had gaps and where we needed to work on that flexibility, that agility, because it was a challenge on a day-to-day basis, and it still is. It's not near over. That was kind of why we said, this is it. This is how we're the normal. It's not crisis management anymore. It's the new normal management. And I think we still continue to look at ways to learn from this crisis and get more flexible, get more agile, be able to respond quicker. And it's amazing what Colgate people have been able to do. I mean, part of the learning is, you know, giving people more freedom to operate, empowering people to make more decisions, because we just can't wait. If you don't want the disruption to affect business, decisions have to happen on the ground and happen quickly. And we've done very well. We didn't get everyone right, but no one gets them all right. But the vast majority of those decisions have helped us stay in business and throughout this whole crisis grow as a company, which I'm very proud of.
And going into some of the case studies and practical examples of new solutions or new things that you've developed across supply chain, and I know that you have a very interesting story around factory in a box, right? So maybe tell us a little bit about that innovation and how it came about.
Another very interesting story. Toothpaste is the heart and soul of our company. I mean, it's the name on the door is Colgate, and Colgate toothpaste is the toothpaste that's in the most household. It's the brand in most households in the world. And we take making toothpaste very seriously. The quality, the production, the efficiency. And it's difficult sometimes to get to certain locations and geographies because of duty structure, raw material availability. And so we have, you know, many large sites around the world, but we also ship to many countries. And sometimes it puts us in a disadvantage from a cost situation and from a supply chain time planning to get there. So we thought about, okay, how could we take some of the complexity out and put units on the ground where we could ship in, say, the bulk material, fill it, put it in a tube, put it in a carton, and get it out to the market. So that's kind of where the genesis of the factory in a box. And then the challenge was, okay, I want it to be the size of a shipping container. So it goes on any, you know, ocean vessel. Little did we know we were going to have, when we started, all these, you know, ocean disruptions. And it has to be flexible where I could drop it into a warehouse somewhere and I can pick it up and move it somewhere else in case, you know, demand changed, a geographic need happened. And it's, again, an amazing tribute to Colgate people. Over 150 people worked on this during the pandemic. And in 6 months, we had this ready to go. It's being deployed now. And we're all very, very excited and very, very proud of this. And because of the pandemic, it makes you start to think kind of differently in terms of manufacturing operations. Hey, maybe I could have multiple boxes taken to multiple geographies. Maybe it gets us to where there's underserved people. Maybe it's not just a geographic opportunity, but it can get us to locations and get production on the ground that today takes longer, has less focus. So it really opens up the possibilities of what we could do.
And specifically on the point of agility and speed to action, right? So, I mean, I was reading it took you 6 months from kickoff, or the project teams managed to pull it off from zero to hero within 6 months, right, of this project, right? So maybe walk us through what are some of the hows, right? How do you manage to achieve that speed and that agility in practice and get it implemented so quickly? Are there certain secret sources of success?
Yeah, I think it goes back to we gave people and empowered them to do it. We got some of our equipment manufacturers with us, and they had the same task. It was, we made the scope very clear about what it was and what it wasn't, so that it was made people easier to focus on what they were doing and get it delivered. And there was a sense of urgency in terms of time. So that's where, again, Colgate people stepped up all over the world to help. And amazing. Again, we wouldn't have guessed this a few years ago that we could do something like in this period of time. And, you know, I've seen the videos, and the quality of what they produce there is quite impressive. It really is.
Yeah, and I can imagine. I mean, for more developed economies, I guess accessibility is not as much of an issue. But then if you talk about developing economies, you're talking about areas in Africa, Southeast Asia, I don't know, Latin America, South America, there's plentiful of really a lot of areas where this would be very, very necessary.
Yeah, but you also start thinking, what about in a developed world, if I wanted to run a specific promotion at a retailer, I could put this and it could go from the box to the shelf or the box to the consumer. There are endless possibilities with this.
Yeah. No, but fascinating. So we'll share some more of these details. And I think, you know, Robert from your team has also given us some of this input. So we'll share separately. Now, Mike, I want to, in the context of what's happening in Glasgow these days, right? I also want to bring, and we've gotten this question via YouTube and some of the other channels, topic of sustainability. And specifically, I know that also Colgate is leading the way. You've done some amazing things around packaging. I think is the first recyclable packaging for toothpaste that you've managed to come up with. But I want to put it in the context of collaboration, right? It's a word that a lot of people talk about. Ultimately, all executives across, whether it's supply chain, CEOs, board members, want to achieve sustainability. But we have quite a way to go to collaborate properly, whether it's industry, in industry or cross industry, right? So tell us your thoughts around specifically how to collaborate, how to build partnerships, ecosystems better to speed up our sustainability goals.
Well, if we really do want to imagine a future, a healthier world for the planet, we're going to have to collaborate and do this together. One of the things we're very proud of is we did all the design and engineering to create this recyclable tube, and we've made very public that we will share that with anyone. So we want that to be one less stream of plastic that gets into the waste stream and gets back into the recycle stream. So that's our start, I think, of trying to collaborate. But there's more to be done. That's how you're going to solve these problems. That's how we can make a real difference to the world. I believe that there's no such thing as a supply chain strategy without a embedded sustainability strategy where you make sure that what you do is not only efficient and high quality, but it's also sustainable. And that's something we're working on here very hard. It's part of everything we do and very proud of the results, but there's a lot more we could do. And to your point, we're starting to look at collaboration with competitors, but on something that we feel this is not a competitive advantage. This is a moral, this is the right thing to do for the environment, for the planet, and we want to work together to make things better.
Mm. And look, I mean, pragmatically, it usually the right thing is also in this context, most of the times is the economic thing. It does mean achieving more effective supply chain systems at large, obviously cost reductions as well, typically. And also the consumers, right? I mean, more and more the younger generation, it's almost like a significant risk to the company if you don't do it, because ultimately there's going to be that public perception that has a very strong or stronger and stronger voice that can tax you on it. And to follow up, actually, we got a question. I'll pull it. Actually, this is from LinkedIn. And Sophia is one of that young generation of supply chain professionals all the way from Americas. And she's asking you, what kind of energy powers this factory in a box? What's its environmental impact?
I mean, it's a great question. Right now, we're looking at tying into the energy source in the location we move it to. But could that use solar energy at one point? Could there be alternative energies there? You know, absolutely. We're trying to a little bit walk before we run to get it going. But that is definitely one of the concerns and one of the goals that we have. It's real interesting when it comes to energy. And as just one example, solar, you know, when we started back, it was, the payback is terrible and it doesn't really cover a lot of your needs. Then we started implementing systems and where we said, well, we think it's going to use, we're going to produce 10% of our needs, we find out we're doing closer to 20. And it also helps you when you're managing your usage. And so these systems become, you know, much more, as you said, efficient and cost effective and the right thing to do. So that's exactly what we're experiencing. But more to come with the energy sources around the factory in the box.
And I was sharing with Francisco Betti is the leader at the advanced manufacturing side of World Economic Forum. And he was saying that they have the global lighthouses, which is basically the some of the best factories in the world. And they've actually studied and said that 63-64%, I can't remember exactly, of those factories improved massively their sustainability index across the board. And not necessarily that these Industry 4.0 initiatives need to be expensive. So there's like a, it's also, you know, if we are creative, if we deploy the right type of technology with the right type of planning and the right creativity, all of this can come together. It doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to, you know, cost a bomb. Obviously, we need to be a little bit intentional about it and creative, but it happens.
And we've taken that challenge on. We are partnering with the True Zero Waste. We are have a program to get all our factories certified to have, you know, true zero waste to landfill. And it's certified by an outside agency, the same agency that does LEEDs certification on buildings. We want to do water efficiencies. We've gone to net zero water so that the water we use that we're putting back into the aquifer. And the same thing with energy. How can we do that? And those factories have become much more efficient while we're doing that. So it's not only the right thing to do, it's the right business thing to do.
Now, Mike, moving to the people side, right? So the supply chain teams at large, yourself, obviously, and all your team, I think, for the last 18 months, and by the way, it doesn't seem to be stopping, yeah? it's like you said, it's a continuous crisis, right? So the normal is crisis mode. A lot of pressure, I think, lots of people have been tired, literally burnt out, to be fair. I think we're also in the middle of a mental health crisis. And I think we need to, I mean, most of the companies that we talk with are putting in programs or trying to really look at how can we make sure that the people don't go completely berserk, right? So asking you from that angle as well, and what are some of the things that perhaps you've put in place at Colgate? What and how do you best take care of your teams and the people that keep this going and keep the machine moving?
One thing that has helped a lot, and it also shows that maybe something we should have been doing before the crisis, is communicating much more. We'll send, you know, where I'm doing videos or sending things to people on the ground, thanking them, encouraging them, showing the gratitude that they come to work every day for us. We just had an incredible experience where in Vietnam, the government shut down around the large cities because of COVID. But with one caveat that if your workers were housed on the site, they could continue. We had over 300 people volunteer to stay, and we created dormitories out of cafeterias and conference rooms, and they kept the facility running for 12 weeks. And then during that period of time, we were able to get people vaccinated, and then the government again eased the restrictions. But incredible, incredible dedication and service by Colgate people in, you know, our Vietnam plant that services the world. So it was very critical for us. And, you know, it amazes me that people step up to do that. And they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, it's been, and back to the point that you said with the empowerment, usually when people, when you give that freedom, usually people step up. And it's quite incredible that, I mean, ultimately the reason why all of us didn't suffer from hunger, from, you know, from a lot of, you know, shortages. Okay, there's been some toilet paper, God knows. Okay, now we're having some significant semiconductor crisis, but it's not, you know, it's not to the point where you can't eat, right? It's okay. If you can't buy the car that you want exactly today, okay, I mean, it's not life-threatening at large, right? But the reason why that has happened, because of the supply chain professionals, because they've kept the world going.
Yeah. And, you know, and part of what we're in the middle of the mother of all bullwhip effects, if you think about it, because you're not using more toilet paper. You're not, people don't brush their teeth more, but that demand has gone, you know, crazy as we get hoarding or we get perceived shortages because of shipping lines that are out of sync, right? The flow has been disrupted. And so to get that back to a steady state is going to take a long time because it literally has gotten the world out of sync in terms of supply. So there has been some demand increases, but a lot of it is kind of artificial. But it's really done a number on the flow of goods and services, you know, throughout the world.
Yes, there's probably going to still be things to come.
For sure. For sure, this is not near over.
Yes, yes. Wanted to, and also I'm seeing some questions that pop up. If you are to extract some learnings from your long career, right? And also, I mean, there was this particular question in terms of, and how did you keep going? Like, is there a certain career advice that you can say that helped you get where you are, right? So if somebody is now entering the workforce, right? And you were to give some as a mentor, right? Okay, this is the blueprint of advice in terms of getting to C-level. What would that be, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's important that people are open to doing different things. It's very difficult to just come in and have a, this is what I'm going to do, right? Be very open to learn, right? So new opportunities, new challenges, new locations, new geographies, especially as you're starting out your career, those learning experiences stay with you for a long time. And it's not, I see a lot of times people will turn down things for maybe a short term, don't want to do that, or I don't want to move there. Career's a long time, right? If you look at it. And the more diverse opportunities you take early in your career, the more powerful your career trajectory becomes.
Let me double click a little bit, right? Because I know that also you moved around, right? So you were in Philippines, which is, and that was like, what, about 20 years ago, right? And
it's not easy now. 1995, yep.
Yeah. So, and then you've been Malaysian. Was there a certain inflection point to this point that you just made, right? Be open and then, but can you pinpoint, right? Because usually we have this in our minds, right? Oh, it's. I remember the day even, or I mean, it doesn't have to be that specific, right? But were there certain experiences that really you can point back, okay, that time, this was, you know, what really kind of, I don't know, inspired me in one way, shape or form?
Yeah, there's a couple. One was even earlier than that. I was given the opportunity to work on the design, the build, and then the first plant manager of a new plant that produced just flavor and fragrances for Colgate. It's our plant in Burlington, New Jersey. And getting that opportunity, it was kind of one of these things they didn't know what to do with and nobody wanted really to do it. So, okay, Mike, you try it. And it turned out to be just a spectacular part of my whole development and learning how to work with people, how to make design and people mesh to get the most out of people, how to empower people. It was a union plant that the workforce designed the work schedule and did the, you know, the production planning and made the things happen and looked at objectives and efficiencies. And it stayed with me my entire career about how powerful it is when you get all the people on one page pulling for the same goal. You know, the moves in international were very interesting in that you got much closer to the business part of Colgate than you were back in, say, more of the developed world where you were kind of managing your area. And so in the Philippines, in Malaysia, working directly with distributors, with retailers, really trying to look at end-to-end supply chain and the efficiencies we could drive and the sales that we could enable, those taught me quite a bit and things that I continue to lean on today.
No, that's awesome. And Mike, final question from our side, and this has also come in the sense of perception of supply chain or elevating the role of supply chain. I don't know how to necessarily frame it, but in certain companies, it's still seen, or it was, now COVID has kind of reshaped a lot of the thinking, but as a back function or as a, I mean, not strategic, right? More and more people like yourself, like other chief supply chain officers, emphasize that supply chain is and should be a business differentiator, right? Moving forward, how can we further elevate both the profession, the function, as well as the, you know, representation at C-level, board level, you know, the future CEOs to come from supply chain?
I do believe that's going to happen. I do believe it's going to take time, as you know. I think now people like myself need to stand up and represent what we do at the board level, in the CEO's office. And I'm not sure that it was something that they didn't want to hear in the past. It might be that we never stepped up and said it, you know. So there's a responsibility on both sides here to put forward the importance of the supply chain to any business function. It's just not a back office cost and efficiency. It's the heart and soul of the company because those are the products that people buy. What you do enables revenue. if you do it well, you can enable more revenue. And if you don't, we see what happens when it gets disrupted. So, you know, sometimes you have to take a seat at the table, not just be invited, right?
Yeah, there's a beautiful saying that I like is don't wait to be invited, bring your own seat, which is very close to what you just
said. Right. That's correct. Yeah.
Or if they really don't, build your own table. So,
right. So
on that note, Mike, I want to thank you for your time. Thanks for all the sharing. Good luck with the, peak season, last months of the year. I mean, I don't know what, God knows what else will happen, you know, but good luck with all of that. And thanks a lot for joining us today and bringing your sharing.
Oh, thank you, Rado. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.